This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Forget the frustration of picking commerce platforms when you switch your business to Shopify, the global commerce platform that supercharges your selling wherever you sell. With Shopify, you'll harness the same intuitive features, trusted apps, and powerful analytics used by the world's leading brands. Sign up today for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/tech, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/tech.
This episode is brought to you by FX's The Veil, starring Elizabeth Moss. FX's The Veil is an international spy thriller that follows two women as they play a deadly game of truth and lies on the road from Istanbul to Paris and London. One woman has a secret, and the other has a mission to reveal it before thousands of lives are lost. FX's The Veil premieres April 30th, only on Hulu.
Viva la revolution.
It's a revolution. Doing it nation.
Oh my God. Doing it nation. Thanks for sticking with us all this time. And boy, are you rewarded today. I mean,
yeah. I mean, thanks for doing it. Continuing to doing it.
We put you through we put you through some episodes that I'd love to take back. I'm not going to lie. I mean, I'm not going to point fingers at people, but
no. I mean, there's certain people that have delivered, and then there's certain people that.
Yeah. I mean, Michelle Obama was frankly a little disappointing, I thought.
I mean, a little bit. It's like she was like the Postmates person that can't figure out your address. You know, it's like she's there, but not really.
How did I buzz in?
Well, yeah.
But boy, have we made it up. Jenny, you traditionally introduce our guests. So
I do, because you're not very good at it.
No, I stumble.
You stumble. Well, you get too nervous.
We do. There's a lot of pressure.
Because we had heavy hitters. We got a heavy hitter.
Not today.
No, we do too. I don't even know where to start. Like, how much I enjoy this person who is our guest. I truly, one of my favorite people. I mean, I found our guest through Twitter, I don't know, 2000 decades ago. But literally everything that I love on Family Guy, I feel like comes from this person. It's Alex Sulkin. It's the Sulk. I mean, if you don't follow, I don't know what to tell you. I mean, if you like the movie Ted, if you like Ted 2, if you like Ted 3, Judgment Day, I don't know.
Nice.
But Alex, this is so exciting. Thank you for being here.
Well, thanks for having me. As you said, you went through, if you like Ted 2, if there's an example of applause declining, on that, then
we need to make it a plot up guy. No, put that in.
I thank you guys for having me. I love you. I love what you guys are doing. So I really appreciate it. I'm not going to say it's about time, but I'm very happy to be here.
With certain people, you're just afraid to approach them right away. You don't want to. I mean, we're always, when we put out the breakdown of podcast guests, it said, looking for an Alex Sulkin type.
Right. So you had David Krumholz, Adam Goldberg. You had a few.
Yeah, and
No, we had Keith Morrison from Dateline.
That was
close. Yeah, we had Keith. Oh. Yeah,
Similar.
And then we had Anne Murray, which is very similar as well.
Oh, Anne Murray, the snowbird. Love Anne Murray.
Oh my God, that was Danny and I literally fangirling like. Oh my God, it's fucking Anne Murray.
I mean, it was crazy. And we've had a few that I fangirled on, and we fangirl with you too. I mean,
we've had astronauts, but this is better.
Well, did you have the one? Oh, no. I guess that was her lover who shit her pants driving across country to go see
her. The diaper.
I'm still waiting to hear back from her. I invited her. I'm a fan of her work.
She'd be a good guest for you guys.
I'm separated, so I'm hoping maybe something happens with it. Well, yeah, it's great to see you. I mean, I came to know you, Al. I mean, I always credit you with, I had a very dismissive attitude about Twitter, about not like the dismissive attitude I have about it now, which is
right.
But early on, it was, I thought, like, what, 140 cat? What is this for people who are like don't have the patience to post on Facebook? I didn't understand it.
Mm-hmm.
And then I don't know, like 13 years ago or 14 years ago, like I saw, oh, you're making these jokes. You're doing jokes. You're doing funny. I would love to do that because I don't know about you, like. You know, there were all these jokes you could write, but if you're working on a family show, like there were jokes I could never do on Modern Family, or the jokes I couldn't do on previous shows. And it's like, I came up as a joke writer. So you inspired, I think, a lot of people, yeah. A lot of funny people to spread their wings on Twitter.
And thank you for saying that. It's very nice. When I first joined Twitter, like most older people joining something youngish like that, I totally relied on the help of, it was like an intern or an assistant at Family Guy at the time who was going on and on about Twitter. And so I think my first tweet, which sometimes they'll send you like, here's your first tweet. Remember?
Right.
And my first tweet was to this guy, Spencer Porter. It was like, is this how it works?
Yeah.
So like, then I get like, it's not a joke or an indication of anything. It's just an right. old guy trying to use something new.
Fucking... like when your parents' friends like send you those Facebook friend requests,
yes.
And their profile picture's like sideways, and it's always like you need to clean your screen off. And, yeah. And their first post will be like, "How do I do this? Am I Facebooking right? Like, am I doing this correctly?"
Exactly.
Absolutely. It's sort of related to that. And one of my favorite things that ever happened on Twitter, and happened many years ago. Do you follow Mary Coco, Mary Kobayashi? But
oh yes,
I love Mary Coco.
But she found, and this is how I became friends with her. She found an account. It was this guy. It was an account with Daffy Duck on it. But that was Donald Duck. It was Donald and he Duck. So it's at Donald Duck. And the tweet was simply no capitalization, no earthquake.
Oh shit.
You feel it?
I just found that. Oh my
Whoa.
God.
Holy cow.
East Coast. It just goes earthquake.
East yeah. Coast.
And I just felt it.
Wow.
It was wild.
Wow. And you didn't wow. feel anything. Fuck
no,
you,
I'm on Cape Cod, so nothing. I felt a sea breeze. It was a little worrying.
Was it a little muggy out?
Yeah.
Was there a little
wow. Like... Oh, let me finish that short. I mean, it's hard to top an earthquake, but I don't want to leave the audience hanging on Donald Duck. But
like the most dramatic podcast we've ever had.
I know. I feel like we were also very brave. Like we didn't do that thing that the news anchors do.
Yeah.
Like
at it, no offense, it didn't seem like it was that big.
They're saying it's the biggest earthquake.
But by the way, I bet if you go on Twitter right now, people will be like, "It's Armageddon. Are you fucking kidding me?" Like hunker down. We were like, what? Yeah. Oh my God, that's hilarious.
Well, no, does this bother you that now like the tweets will come out that are just kind of like those people who are like halfway to being funny and they're kind of like, oh, thanks, LA. What else you got? Or like, oh, okay, just a Wednesday, whenever, LA. It's like,
yeah.
That's like breakfast for me. Like, what else do you have? Every time you see that, when I first moved to out here, like 8 years ago, and I remember it rained and I couldn't believe like it was trending on Twitter. Yeah. It was just raining. That was it. I'm like, people, Priuses are spinning out. Like it was the least, like I'm coming from Houston where there's fucking hurricanes and shit. And everyone's like,
yeah.
Oh my God.
It's crazy. People just want to just, it's also funny. It's like anybody else feel that. And it's like, you could find for sure in second if we had an earthquake.
Let me finish this story, Jenny,
or I'm gonna explode just so I never have to say it again. It's like I don't want to go back. I want to get rid of this story. It's not, and it's gonna die on the vine here. But it was like trust me, it's not. But this Donald Duck had one tweet ever, and it was, "Hey guys," and it has 30,000 retweets because everybody was just, and this guy never came on. I wonder if he ever saw it, but that's it.
Wow. Back to Earth.
But by the way, you're probably responsible for like 10,000 of those. Hey guys.
I love it. I still do it. And often when there's it actually ties into this. When there's an earthquake and people are like, "Did you feel that?" Like instead of doing anything, I just retweet the "Hey guys."
So did you tweet that during the insurrection?
I was too angry to answer.
Danny and I always do the asshole thing too, which was hashtagging Coney 2012.
That's our favorite.
Everything. Like, it doesn't matter what happened. I'm like, oh my God, my dad died, Coney 2012.
Like, cats of the internet. You know. 2025.
So, Alec, you became like someone that was. How did you find Twitter? Like, how was that something as you got on it? You felt like the old person, but you became very popular.
Well, I had a few lucky, like anything like that, where I just one of the writers on Family Guy for a long time is this guy Gary Jannetty. So funny, you know.
I love Gary. Yeah,
you guys know Gary, obviously. So. He's been dating this guy, Brad, or they're married, Brad Goreski.
Yeah.
And you know him, he had his Bravo show and all that stuff. He's a fashion designer, but not designer. What is he?
He's a stylist. He's like a, you know.
Yeah, I didn't want to get that wrong.
Yeah.
But
they're both beautiful. It's
really they are. It's funny. And as Gary always likes to say, he's like, you should have seen me in my 20s. He's always like bemoaning how hot he used to be. But anyway, Brad already had like kind of a Twitter presence because he was either on TV on the Rachel Zoe project at that time or something. Yeah. So he had like, you know, 50,000, which was a lot. It seemed like a ton. And so when I started tweeting, I guess Gary was reading it and he would show it to Brad. And so Brad started retweeting me and that created like an instant kind of, you know, back when people listened to other people on Twitter and you'd say, follow somebody. And then a bunch of people would go follow them.
Exactly.
So that's kind of what happened. Yeah. That happened to start it off. And then it just hit that kind of critical mass where it grew on its own for a little while.
I do think what you did that, like especially early on that people weren't doing at all was you really locked into a voice on like you found this voice but it was like it was very like it was just like it was like oh you're not just these are you I could read a tweet and know it was yours at a certain point, which was like because well first of all they your batting average was super high and I think like it was basically like you and Rob Delaney also
funny
had that voice on Twitter and it was just like and I think you know for him there was like and probably for you too to some extent although you were already kind of established as a writer on Family Guy right
I'd been there for a while for about 7 years at that point
because Rob's career took off from
Twitter, totally
and he really was smart about it so
absolutely and he's hilarious. And that's very nice of you to say. And I think as Jenny pointed out, it just happens to be very lucky there again that my last name is Sulkin and that, you know, I kind of look annoyed. And so I think that all just made it a lot easier. I remember having so much fun picking out my Twitter avatar, you know, like just like looking for that picture and finding it and then being like, oh, okay, well, yeah, this guy looks like he would just be annoyed at everything.
I didn't recognize, you're one of those people I didn't recognize when I met you because you had that bigger beard. It doesn't like, I remember meeting you maybe like, I don't know, a year or two after I followed you. And I was like, oh, that's not, I didn't realize that.
Yeah.
So you had your mustache working.
Yeah. I kind of have a Play-Doh barbershop type face where different things come in at different times.
That's sexy.
Thank you. Danny, separated, you say.
Hello.
And I'm feeling very left out. I'm the only one who doesn't have an instrument behind me.
Yeah, mine's bigger.
Well, I can't play mine. Danny can actually play his. So there's.
But I'll do a concert later.
Pure decoration. I have to say that one thing. Do you want to ask a question first?
No, you go and then I'll ask.
Okay.
I cut you off before, so you're entitled to a cut.
This is your cut.
So one thing I very much enjoyed was when it was you and your dad having a visit together and you would document your dad and like going down the pharmacy aisle and like
I remember that.
That was something that was so enjoyable to me. Did your dad think that was funny? was he aware of it?
It's not even that complicated. I made it more complicated than it needed to be. But I have obviously, as we all do with our dads, I have a long Richard history with my dad. So my dad, and my mom got divorced when I was 5, and he left and lived in England for a while. And so then I think that I just convinced myself at some point in my life that I should be upset with him about that, even though he's like such a sweet guy. And looking back now as a 48-year-old man and seeing the different ways that wives can make you feel, I have so much more sympathy for my dad. I'm like, I kind of blamed him for leaving. And now I'm looking at the whole thing so anyway, all this going in, I feel like when I would do comedy about my dad, even back then, which is now whatever, 10 years ago or something, and I had a different attitude towards him. And I was like, well, if he's offended by that, well, I don't fucking care because he left when I was 5. So I would do all this shit and he might be made aware of it. And I'd have to go through a little parent, yeah, father, son phone call of oh, dad, it's flattering. And you're part of this thing. And so many people liked it. So I think I was justified in my mind. But now I think I'm in a much better place with my dad. And I think he would laugh at that. Because I remember exactly the tweet you're referring to, which was right when he came to visit me in town. The very first place he made me stop was to go get Metamucil and all sorts of things to help him shit. And
he took a picture of him walking down the aisle, just looking like,
yeah.
I mean, so I took funny. My dad, same thing. It's just
My therapy experience was my dad was, I think, not as sweet a guy as yours sounds like, but I did have that moment where it's I always think the goal of therapy should be you go in, you hate one parent, and if it's successful therapy, you come out hating both of them.
Right.
I kind of relate to it. The question I wanted to ask you, because I think people are always interested, we have probably a lot of aspiring comedy people out there, and I always find people's journey to the big gig interesting. How did you come to be a part of Seth's World? What were you working on before that? Give me your origin story.
Sure. Well, I mean, the very fast version of before LA was worked for Saturday Night Live as a writer's assistant, and was fired, replaced by Regis Philbin's daughter. So it was,
I actually know JJ.
It was kind of a nightmarish thing. I bring it up on every podcast, and I met her once finally, and she's like, yeah, I'm JJ Philbin. So clearly she's heard me gripe about it before.
Wait, how long were you there?
I was an intern at Saturday Night Live when I was in college, which was a very cool thing. So then I was able to turn that into becoming the writer's assistant there my first year out of college. And being a writer's assistant back then was totally different than it is now, whereas now you need people who can get every word and they're organizing but there weren't even computers or internet or anything when I was there. So writers just would go in their office and write. And I was in charge of getting meals, bringing food up. Wow. It wasn't glamorous, but it was, my desk was literally right in the room where they all performed the table. It was great. I loved that job. And I wanted to work there.
That's great.
Yeah, I wanted to work, be there, a writer there so badly. They used to let me write, you probably remember on Must See TV Thursdays, when in between 9 and 9:30 show, they'd have the host from SNL and be like, hi, I'm David Schwimmer. I'm hosting SNL with the band live. And then one joke.
Yeah.
And so they used to let me write those jokes.
Oh, that's so thrilling.
And it was and by the way, that little joke, whatever little joke I wrote for those weeks, is already will be seen by way more people than we'll ever see anything else that I do. So it was a thrilling time. And so I'm all amped up, I'm going to work as a writer's assistant and then I'll be a writer here. Then JJ Philbin, who is a nice person, by the way, comes on her dad's show, Live with Regis and Kathy Lee. And Regis is like, JJ, look at the camera, talk right to Lorne Michaels. And she was like, hi, Lorne, I want a job on your show. So a little secret about SNL is nobody gets fired from SNL. Nobody. There was like a sound engineer there who literally burned his office down with a crack pipe, was not fired. So but I am just instantly tossed out when Jay Philbin needs a spot. And so I said that was going to be short and I lied. I apologize.
I love this story.
It gets me fired up. It's so anyway, then I'm tossed into the cesspool of New York stand-up, where I meet different people that we still work with all the time. And but I do that
what year would this have been, by the way?
This is like 96, because I remember my first jokes were about the Atlanta Olympics. or whatever Olympics were in 96.
Yeah, it was 96. That was the year I graduated high school, and that was the Olympics.
Right. So now I feel older. But
you'll never be as old as Danny.
So. Yeah,
that's right.
Years older than you. Thank I figured God. It out. Yeah.
So I did that for a while, was living on my living situation was ridiculous. I was living with my girlfriend in New York, but she lived with her parents. So we were actually living in her childhood bedroom on bunk beds. My face was like this far away from like a taped up picture of Kevin Bacon out of Rolling Stone. That was like kind of fraying on the edge. So I lived in that situation for 3 years almost.
Oh my God.
Yeah, a long time. And then just through, again, another stroke of luck, some guy I knew at SNL was going out to start writing for the Late Late Show with Craig Kilborn. And he got my packet of jokes in front of him, and I was lucky enough to get hired. That's in 1999.
Wow.
So I came out to LA with a job, was working there for 3 years, decided I wanted to get into sitcoms for the money.
Right.
And was lucky enough to land on a show called The Pitts.
Oh yeah.
Short-lived show on Fox, created by Mike Scully.
Right.
Awesome guy. Seth MacFarlane was on that staff because it was in one of the periods when Family Guy was canceled.
Mm-hmm.
And so we are basically the same age, and we hit it off on that show, and we started like going to bars and karaoke and stuff. And I remember him telling me at a karaoke bar, like, they're thinking of bringing Family Guy back, and would you want to work there? And at the time, I had never seen it because I was totally like a Simpsons purist.
Yeah. And we had to denigrate that at that point. I remember that.
Yeah.
And it was really.
Oh, I was so much so that when it was on the first time in it, because I would watch Friends, and Family Guy and Friends were up against each other, which is why Family Guy was canceled.
Mm-hmm. Like,
they set them up to fail. But
yeah.
I would, put the VHS tape in to record Family Guy, and then I would watch Friends, but obviously nothing picks up on those numbers.
No, those numbers. we've got some promising Betamax numbers in Houston.
But I was like, I'm such a diehard Simpsons fan that I remember going, okay, let's see what you're about, Family Guy.
Yeah.
Like, I was just so cocky about it, but I loved it instantly.
Doing It Nation, our partners at BetOnline continue to be the number one source for all your betting needs and sports info. Find all the latest odds, news, and sports developments, including this year's NBA Finals, the NHL Hockey Conference Finals, Major League Baseball scores, all the latest fighting news, and even next season's early NFL futures. BetOnline is your continued source for all your sporting wagering information. From live betting to playoffs, esports, and more. Head to the website or use your mobile device to sign up today to receive your 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. Just use our promo code CLNS50, that's CLNS50, to get the bonus and get into the action. Bet online, where the game starts.
Okay, Doing It Nation listeners, I'm about to hit y'all with a testimonial from our new sponsor that I'm absolutely thrilled about. It's Athletic Greens and their product AG1, which I recently started taking. And I have to tell y'all, you've heard it from me, Jenny Johnson, comedian, podcast host, all around hottie. You got to get yourself some AG1, okay? Because I started taking it And I have noticed such a huge difference. It contains, a big thing for me is I'm always looking for things low in sugar. This contains less than 1 gram of sugar, no GMOs, no nasty chemicals or artificial anything, all while still tasting good. And I'm forever searching for health options low in sugar and high in taste, and this actually has both, so it's absolutely perfect for me. It gives me energy during the day and helps me get a great night's sleep, which is something I've always struggled with. And right now, it's the time to reclaim your health and arm your immune system with convenient daily nutrition. It's just one scoop and a cup of water every day, that's it. No need for a million different pills and supplements to look out for your health. To make it easy, Athletic Greens is going to give you a free 1 year supply of immune supporting vitamin D and 5 free travel packs with your first purchase. All you have to do is visit athleticgreens.com/doing it. Again, that is athleticgreens.com/doing it to take ownership over your health and pick up the ultimate daily nutritional insurance. AG1, get you some.
Yeah, well, for me, it was one of those things where he was like, they're thinking of bringing it back, and would you like to work there? And my job, whatever I was working on at the time, was either shitty or failing or something. Yeah. And so I said, yeah, sure. And then sure enough, it happened, and I had to jam in a bunch of Family Guy viewings, and then I've been there pretty much since 2004.
It's amazing, God.
Yeah.
And you do like voices too. I mean, you voice a lot of things.
My voice is usually like the one you're hearing now. And
yeah, it's what I imagine Jesus would sound like.
There you go. Very good. Yeah, I think that's another benefit of working with Seth, because early on, at least when we were there, he got it in his mind that the writers who pitch the jokes in many instances were the best people to perform them on the show.
Yeah.
Because he feels like writers have a better sense of like where the joke is and some lines like that.
Yeah.
And so I got to do a lot of voices that end up being like, I say my voice often has a number after it. It's like Jewish guy number two, like Arab guy number three, you know, so I do a lot of that.
Well, I actually remember going to a table read. This was, I mean, I was still living in Houston, like, I don't know, Danny, if it's one of the first times we met, but I was like still in Houston. I was working, and somehow or another, I got invited. I'm trying to remember who it was, that maybe JC Samuels or Artie or like someone invited me to go to a table read, and I was thrilled. You were actually doing Seth Green's part. He wasn't there.
And
you
right, Chris. Yeah.
You do that frequently because you nailed it. I wouldn't have known the difference.
No,
except I'm looking right at you doing
it's that's again, you're too kind. And by the way, if Seth Green were there, you would have noticed the difference. But we do, for most of the table reads, we have the writers reading those parts, because when the table reads were live, obviously a lot of the actors wouldn't come. Now that it's on Zoom, they're kind of there a lot more. But the funny thing with Chris Griffin, because I used to totally enjoy doing that in the sort of hammy actor way.
Yeah.
Sure. You kind of enjoy getting people to be like, oh, he's actually good.
Yeah.
But I was there, I would do that. And then we left Family Guy for a little while to do Ted or Ted 2 or something like that.
Yeah.
And then I came back and we had been gone for a few months. And one of the other writers had been doing it, this writer, Mark Henteman, who's very funny.
Oh, I love Mark. I hired him on a show I did for the WB. He's great.
He's so funny.
Yeah.
You know, he was struck by lightning, right?
Recently or as a kid? Yeah. As a child? No,
but that's the joke. He was struck by lightning as like a teenager when he was a caricature artist at a theme park, like in the parking lot.
Where he ruined every child's fucking self-esteem by pointing out their big nose or giant ears or whatever.
But so when you work with Mark Henteman, that makes a lot of sense.
It does. I never knew this story.
And so we have another writer, I think it's Danny Smith on the show, who says this. He's like, whenever Mark does something weird and then leaves the room, Danny will go, I know Mark was struck by lightning, but was he struck by lightning just now? But so anyway, Mark is doing Chris and he's very good at it. And when I came back, there was very much like this high school-y feeling like Mark does Chris now.
Oh, yeah.
So like when I came back and I can't be like, you know, hey, I want to read this part that's meaningless because I'll never, you know, I don't perform it anyway.
And then they're like, sorry, Ted boy.
Yeah. I'm doing his it Chris is better than your Chris.
And yeah, like, exactly. Well, there's a lot of that.
Lines back and forth, and then a line will be like, I want it, I can rub my penis on you. And you're like, no, I could do it better.
I could
no.
do it better.
God, that is so funny. Well, I know you've been there. I know about Ted. I'm just, why? So you wrote out the whole pandemic in New York. Do you think you're going to stay there? Not in New York.
Massachusetts.
Sorry.
Don't fucking confuse us.
With no, New I know. York. I just can't. Oh, I know. I only think the East Coast is New York.
No, but by the way, I wish I was in New York. It's great. Or, you know, it's the best city in the world. Yeah, so we've been here, my wife and daughter and I, we moved, picked up at like cowards and instantly ran out of Los Angeles early last June. Wow. And we've been loving it here. So we don't have any immediate plans to come back. Obviously, most of the world is Zoom right now. That'll probably change soon, but I think we're going to probably keep some component of that in the Family Guy room.
Well, speaking,
do you think that it will change? Because I feel like there's a weird thing of people realizing, like, that cliche of like, this could have been an email, you know, like this,
yeah,
like people realizing you can get a lot done on Zoom.
I do think a lot of it'll change. I mean, I think a lot of it'll change just for the reasons you just said, because people understand how efficient it can be and how you can get things done. And I also think that a lot of larger, you know, companies will say, like, why are we paying for these giant office buildings when this could be like 12 people in a, you know, a much smaller office? And we'll see.
But have you enjoyed it more? Like, what's your feeling on it? Like, working from there versus being in LA? Like,
well, obviously, it's, as you know, it's fun. It's really fun being in a writer's room, especially with writers that you've known for years and are your good friends now. So I miss that, the social component of it. But in terms of getting the work done, I really have noticed people are more efficient on Zoom. There's just less dilly-dallying.
Yeah.
And I've found that to my eye, it doesn't seem like the quality has dropped off, but it does seem like the efficiency has picked up.
And what were the hours like generally at Family Guy?
They're very good. I mean, we have a lot of writers. So we have, I think it's 23.
Wow.
And you know, new people have been there for like 10 years.
Yeah.
So everybody kind of knows the drill. Everybody, we've mastered that, you know, that we're in that sort of Gladwell zone of having done 10,000 hours of Family Guy, and it just gets easier and easier. So the hours are enviable. You know, we start at 10:30, and if we're out at 5, it's like, feels
that's a long night.
Yeah.
That's amazing. Speaking of the pandemic, I was just so delighted by this part of you, because you really came alive on Instagram. in a way that was just like your Andrew Cuomo stuff and the mayor of Boston. And I mean, that stuff, it was so well done. I mean, I didn't know the mayor of Boston well enough to compare it to anything. So I can only go by your Andrew Cuomo at the moment when he was most swanning and pico, you know, around on it. It was just like, my favorite impressions are the ones that, like, it's not the voice, it's not the catchphrase, it's those people who can get the essence. Dana Carvey is great at that.
The best.
Dana Carvey finds somebody, and then we remember Dana Carvey's impression more than the actual person.
Totally.
Yeah.
And there's other people. But what you found something in that Andrew Cuomo that I even, like, when all hell broke loose for him, when it was like all this shit came out, the first thing I thought about was you. I thought, like, you had a little of that sleazy quality as you were doing it. It was weird. In your impression, it presaged it. I mean, it just, I don't know. You emphasized something in him that in retrospect was a little bit like sleazy.
I know. Well, again, thank you. That's like,
what's a compliment?
That's all anyone who's on Instagram wants to hear.
Yeah. Yeah. You've seen, sure. You were able to sell the sleazy. Very well.
Yes.
Almost effortlessly, frankly.
Well, born to do it.
So natural.
But yeah, no, that that was just a weird thing where, honestly, at the beginning of the pandemic, I think probably like most of us, I was legitimately freaked out. So I think I had extra energy. And I found that doing that Instagram stuff, it kept me, what I would do is I would wake up in the morning and I would go down to like another room in our house where I could kind of shut myself in. Yeah. And then just sit there until I thought of something. And I found that it was a weird release of energy and just kind of like tension at the beginning of my day. And it helped me cope through it all. And of course, part of helping me cope is always monitoring the likes and comments.
Yeah. Very healthy.
Rounds of applause.
Thank you. Oh, you love me too. Okay. I feel better today. This pandemic's going to be swell.
No, I know I did. In the beginning, I was not nearly as prolific as you, but I did find when I would do those little videos or do something, what would happen was it was so like, it just felt like, oh, I'm making something. That's good. And I was really proud of it. And then I saw Bo Burnham's Inside special on Netflix. Yeah. And I wanted to kill myself because that guy got so much fucking done.
I know.
You're just an old piece of shit. You'll never be that good or have that work ethic. So I thought that was
amazing. But we're on the comedy writer scale. So
if we can do
like one thing a week, it's like being
It was a victory. I mean, I made my bed one day and I thought like you would think that I had summited Everest the way I had.
Oh, I was just rolling off the couch doing Zoom comedy shows. And I'm like, I did something. Yes, that's okay. That's okay. Like, I mean, this seems really fucking pathetic, but.
Now with Zoom comedy shows, this may be a stupid question, but is there an audience that you can hear or no?
Yeah, you can. I mean, it's just like regular Zoom. You look out how many people are there. It could be, 30, 40, like over 100, but everyone will be unmuted or asked to keep themselves unmuted unless there's a distraction, which happened frequently, dogs barking, sirens, kids screaming, and somebody would mute them. But yeah, you could hear the feedback. I mean, it felt weird sitting like this doing stand-up comedy, but it was something. Like I felt like I did something.
Yeah. It's the little victories.
It's the little victories, but now that I'm back to doing live shows, I'm like, oh boy, that fucking sucked.
Yeah,
that was horrible. That was the worst thing ever.
I've been to a couple of comedy shows. I'm going to ask you about this because I know you did the Roosevelt show, but it was like, I've been to a few since like things were open, and the comedians just seem so happy, and the audiences just seem so happy to be like it's pretty amazing. There's a special energy about that, and you also see it like at like baseball games or at the NBA. The NBA is, it's not because it's the playoffs, but like just at regular season baseball games, you can just see the fans, just there's bigger smiles on their faces.
Totally. That makes sense.
I've seen and I know Alec, you're a sports fan. Yeah. Like I've also seen more fans not knowing how to behave and like randomly fighting people because they don't know how to like manage their emotions anymore. It's like, you're wearing the jersey of the other team. So
there's the Suns in Four guy has become a hero. Have you seen that guy?
Yes.
It's like this Phoenix Suns fan who another team's fan tried to fight him, and he proceeded to pull his jersey over his head, beat him up, and then go Suns in Four. And now he's got an action figure and people are taking pictures with him.
Who was a player that also like sent him tickets, sent him a jersey. Yes.
thanks for beating up another guy.
Right. That's something that's interesting. So what are you working on now? You've got Family Guy in front of you. What else?
We're still Family Guy Zooming, which is going well. And I'm working on, I hate sounding like this. I think I'm allowed to say this now because I heard it somewhere else. So it must be true. But I think, we're writing a reboot of Naked Gun.
Oh my God.
So I'm working on that script, which I can see your faces like this. And my face was the same way when Seth was like, oh, I'm doing this Naked Gun thing. I was like, oh my God. Yes. It's been a fucking nightmare. But
I understand that part too.
Yes. But that said, we're going to get it done. And it's going to star Liam Neeson as the new Frank Drebin.
Stop it.
So, yeah.
I'm literally looking across the room at Frank Drebin framed like I have it.
Oh, you're the best. The and best.
We just had David.
David Zucker.
Zucker, yeah. Yes, that's right. I know. When I saw that, I was like, I wanted to reach out and grab him by the throat. And just, not because he has nothing to do with it.
No, I understand.
You put me in this predicament because I love your work so much.
Yeah, and it's always tricky, living up to something. Liam Neeson is kind of brilliant. I mean, one of my favorite clips when people, you're trading video clips, is that thing he did in Life is Short, where he do comedy. That clip, I never even saw that show, but I've watched that clip 15 times.
Right.
And I've AIDS.
But Liam is someone that's like, even when we had David on and we were talking about like Leslie Nielsen, there's that thing of like, he's a great dramatic actor, but he's just delivering those same lines the same way. He's not trying to be, funny. Like I've seen Liam do something, maybe it was like an MTV Movie Awards, like some little funny sketch, but he did that same like very serious taken, deal. That's a great choice.
I would pay all of you to be able to, if you do a table, to come to that table. Yeah,
I'll bring y'all coffee, like whatever. You let me know.
Yeah, and I have no gag reflex. Just saying.
He doesn't. Well, he'll do it for me too.
I would trade that table read invite for, let's say, what, 6 jokes.
That's what I'm saying. I don't want to just be there. I want to write jokes. I'm literally offering my services.
I'll hand cups of coffee with my jokes written on the
front. Yeah.
I'm only any of my movie punch ups, no offense to people I punch up for, but when they bring us in at that point on it's never like for a movie that's really working in any way.
Right.
it's for the studio says, hey, bring in a couple comedy, and like I go to those tables mostly, the one or two exceptions, but it's almost always I'll put some ornaments on this dying tree.
Yeah. But
this is called You Got Served. Can you fix this, Dan? Step up.
That's amazing though. That's so much fun. I mean, wow. I'm speechless over that. That's a fun project.
That's fun. And also I'm like you guys, I'm starting a podcast with my friend Julius Sharp, John Goldblatt.
Goldie.
Mm-hmm.
I know Julius. I don't know if I met John.
They're the same people.
Okay, cool. Yeah, maybe I have. Maybe they just interchange.
Yeah, no, he's got a weird thing where he has two names. I don't know Goldie, why.
And he makes it more interesting. I like it. And I loved his book too, by the way.
Me too. So funny. Great. So You're Going Bald. God, it's so great.
Oh, I gotta read that. I didn't even know he had a book.
Funny. And he's very funny about, because it didn't do well. Like no books do well unless you're like Oprah or like, Prince.
Yeah, Harry, unless you're Spread Eagle in the middle of it or something like that.
So we were talking about it the other day and he was like, and you know what? Fuck bald people. He's like, I'm the only one who's ever written a book for them and they fucked me.
Yeah, I know I fucked him. I mean, how can I do that?
Oh, stunning reveal.
Yeah. A friend of mine was going to write, a TV writer I know was writing a book. His agent said to him, why don't I just give you $400 and you don't have to write the book?
Yeah, I know. You get it in your mind and I'm sure you do too. And both of you were, you just have it in your mind like, oh, I could write a great book one day. And then you're like, why? Why would I?
I know. I have one that I'm just trying to get out right now, but it's like, it's just for me. I don't even give a shit. I'm just like, it's basically occupying space in my head. And it's just like, I have to clear this out because it's like, it's been, but who knows?
Yeah.
Do you think you'll come back here to LA?
Well, I mean, I know that when Family Guy offices open back up, I'll probably have to come out for like, some weeks at that time. But I don't know if a permanent move back to LA is in the cards. I'm honestly hoping it's not.
How old is your child, your daughter?
5.
There's something about not growing up in LA that I think is good.
Yeah.
Well, that's like Mike Henry talked about, his living in Richmond and not.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I get it. I could understand not wanting to raise your kid.
Yeah. What could go wrong in Richmond?
I mean,
all I know is that you will not replace them.
That's right. Hey, we will not replace them.
Yes, we will not replace them. That's true. Also, I would never, like, don't worry about us. We have much better jobs.
We're not going to replace anybody. Boy, we've had what a run we've had with Weinstein and Epstein, and now all this stuff. It's been rough.
It's been rough. I'm so happy when someone does something perverted and it's not one of us.
I know.
You're like crossing your fingers, like, nobody, I don't know one that I got to unfollow.
No. Oh, that's an Italian surname, thank God.
Yeah.
Well, let's move to that point in the show where we talk about things we're watching and what we like. And I will start with our guest, Alec. What is, like, blowing your socks off or you're just into and it's guilty pleasure?
Yeah.
To be recent or over.
Yeah. So,
besides this podcast, obviously.
Besides this podcast, which is blowing my mind.
Yeah, everybody.
So, you know, when I'm taking my morning dump, I watch reaction videos on YouTube. I don't know if you guys like those. I love those.
I'm super into
Into them. Like, watching somebody cry while watching Forrest Gump is like, I don't know why that does so much for me.
I've been down this rabbit hole many times. Yeah, I love it.
I have my favorites, and I do you have your favorites? Like, are there people that you love? You go to their reaction.
I think my mind scattered because I did at first. I had my few favorites. I would watch them react to everything. And then it kind of spread out. So now my YouTube algorithm is just sending me anyone who, you know, listens to Al Stewart's Year of the Cat for the first time. I'll get that. But I watched the whole swath of them and I enjoy it. And you get stuck in Forrest Gump, Back to the Future. Like, there are all these things that I remember, obviously, just adoring and just want to watch with these people.
Well, that's what's fun about it, though. You feel like you're watching it with new friends.
Totally.
Yeah, it's like you introduce it. When you introduce somebody, a younger person, to a song or a movie they haven't seen and you watch them love it, hopefully.
Yeah. And like the enthusiasm. I was just watching people react to Reba McEntire's Fancy. That video, if you've never seen it, watch it. It's the funniest shit you've ever seen because it's about, like, her mom, like, turned her out, like, is a prostitute. And it's this whole, like, deep story.
That Reba,
like, it's played out in this video, and you watch people, they're like, no, oh shit, oh no, her mom's like, they get so upset, there's tears at the end. I'm like, this is the greatest fucking thing.
Danny, you must remember on on the Fox lot, there's this one of the sets on the side of it has, like, a big Reba plaque.
Yes. Yeah, you see it all the time. It's hysterical.
I know, it's, I, like,
I actually have. We had a Reba flat at Modern Family or something. I was like, it's a different one. They did it. I mean, yeah, they did a lot.
It's crazy. And also, by the way, Reba McEntire and Dana Carvey never been seen in the same place. It might be one long thing going on there.
I want to see Dana Carvey sitting in Reba.
Yeah. But then in terms of stuff I'm watching on TV, I'm watching a lot of the common stuff, Bachelorettes, Real Housewives, that kind of stuff. Guilty pleasures. I'm really into right now. I watch BritBox a lot. I don't know if you have that.
Yeah.
So what are you watching? Are you watching, like, the English murder shows, or are you watching the comedy?
All of BritBox.
Love English murder shows. I can watch any of them. I've seen a lot of them. I don't know. I need to lock into a new one because right now I'm sort of stuck in a weird vortex of continuing to watch the 1990s TV version of Pride and Prejudice with Colin Firth. It's, like, so good.
I've seen it. It is great.
Yeah, it's awesome.
It's like, it's embarrassing. It's like, because somebody else had told me about it, so I watched it. Holy shit, it's so good.
So good.
I've been like, keep going.
Yeah, no. I'm stuck in that. There's something comforting about something that was made in the 90s and set in the 1820s or whatever it was. There are two levels of that serotonin release in your brain of, like, going back to a comforting time and even further back to, And I also get struck when I watch those period dramas in England of, like, how little a production manager has to do on an English thing. It's like, we need to make this look like it's 1830. It's like, well, I guess take that phone booth away and we're good.
Shoot it there.
Yeah.
Just put more ruffles on the girls and they're fine.
So I can watch footage of, like, a British field for an hour and be happy.
That's amazing. We would like, I'll go next, but and then we'll wrap up with Jenny. But like, speaking of this, first of all, I was just out with a friend, a couple old writers, even older than I was last night. And we were talking about BritBox actually, and how the conclusion is there are only maybe 20 actors in all of England, and they do everything. And you get to know all of them. It's kind of amazing.
Absolutely. That's totally true.
I've been on my YouTube hole on speaking of England, I've been watching British panel shows, and I don't see them on BritBox. There's like Jimmy Carr hosts this thing, the Big Fat Quiz of Everything. And I'm a big fan of Richard Iowati, and he's like hysterical on it, and Noel Fielding and those comedy guys. And they're just really funny. So I've gotten down that rabbit hole. Do you know those?
That's so cool. I know Jimmy Carr.
Yeah.
I don't know the other people you mentioned.
Yeah, Richard Iowati, he was like he became sort of famous there. He was the Muzz on the IT Crowd, the British version of that. And then he was also in that Garth Marenghi's Dark Place, which is one of my favorite. It's 6 episodes. If you haven't seen it, it's on YouTube. I just did you a huge favor by telling you about
good.
Garth Marenghi's Dark Place. But then the thing I want to talk about was on Netflix right now is this like limited documentary series. I just like locked it. It came out a couple days ago called This Is Pop. Not to be confused with the This Is Pop documentary on XTC, which is excellent. But This Is Pop. And it's like, it's the history of like pop music in some ways. And so they talk about, there's some really interesting ones. Obviously they talk about Britpop. They talk about, there was one episode on Sweden's influence on pop music beyond ABBA. And it's crazy how Sweden has stealthily molded, it continues to, all of pop. They're basically responsible for Backstreet Boys, all of that. It's the Swedish producers who are doing that. Very fascinating.
Crazy.
The one that was fascinating me, and I really, they did an episode on Auto-Tune. And obviously, I'm like so sick of Auto-Tune. And who do you think of, and we hate him for Auto-Tune most of the time, is T-Pain. You know, we think about like, oh, that T-Pain is like, and T-Pain features heavily. They interview him. And you leave.
I saw this.
I left watching that. And I'm not saying I love T-Pain's music, but it's like, I love T-Pain.
Right.
He is the loveliest, most sensitive, beautiful man I have ever seen. He's just like, I wanted to hug him throughout, and he's just open-hearted and wonderful. It's like it altered, you know, it's just great.
I love that.
It make you want to punch Usher.
It made me want to fucking slam Usher. I don't want to spoil anything, but yes.
Yeah, I love that. That reminds me of I'm sure maybe you guys watched a couple of years ago an HBO documentary called The Defiant Ones. It was it was about Dr. Dre and Jimmy Iovine.
Yeah.
And like, I went into it sort of indifferent on Dr. Dre and kind of thinking Jimmy Iovine was a scumbag.
Yeah.
And then watching it, I was like, I love both of these guys.
Yeah. They're brilliant.
Yes.
They're brilliant. They're strategic. It's amazing.
Yep.
Yeah.
Jenny, what are you watching?
Okay. I just started watching it. I know it's been on for a while. It's not on anymore, but Angie Tribeca.
Oh yeah, that's like
Tribeca. Rashida Jones.
Yeah,
I haven't seen it. Steve Carell, his wife, created it. It was, I think, on from 2016 to 2018. They're all on Hulu.
Oh.
It was a TBS show. It is like some Airplane Naked Gun shit. It's like that, like slapstick.
By the way, Steve Carell's wife has a name. It's Mrs. Carell.
Yes.
I call her Oprah. No, I'm just kidding.
That's Nancy Walls, right?
Yes, of course.
Yes, I was going to say that. I just was Mr. and Mrs. Carell.
We worked, we had a writer on the show, Ryan Walls, who was his, Nancy is his aunt.
Oh, nice.
Aunt Nancy, okay. Aunt Nancy. Well, that's completely hilarious. It literally has a cameo by every funny person you've ever seen. Like, it's highly recommend it. It's very funny. I'm not done with it yet, but
I'm definitely going to watch it.
Yeah.
Oh, I have one more. Can I do one more? I know I lost my turn.
Yes.
Or do you have one more?
No, you go.
Okay, one more. I was recommended, which I never saw, speaking of something that was on, Man Seeking Woman. I never saw that on FX with Jay Baruchel.
Oh, yeah. I remember.
I know what you're talking about, but I haven't seen it.
It's bananas. It's real. I think it's really fun so far. I mean, I'm three episodes in, but it's really fun. So.
Jay Baruchel had a moment there and when everyone was like, he's going to be the next big thing. And I think he's really good.
He's terrific. He's great. And this is the end. And
well, he's had a great career. I mean, it's just, he's not been that name. I think that's like,
right. I think everyone thought he was kind of going to be that guy.
Yeah, like, that guy. Yeah, so I don't, who knows? Fingers crossed.
Last shout out for me is not even a shout out. If you everybody has HBO Max, I'm sure.
Yeah.
You know, so they have the catalog of movies that come to HBO. One of the new ones that came, which for no reason I decided to watch last weekend, was the early 90s Robin Hood Prince of Thieves with Kevin Costner. Yeah. Which I'm sure we all saw at the time.
Slow dance to that Bryan Adams.
Yeah. Especially Danny, if you haven't seen it, it is unintentionally hysterical. And it's mostly because of Kevin Costner's hair management.
Oh, I can't wait.
It was like an unbelievably precise skill at that time because it was, you know, he's got his issues there.
Yeah.
And just trying to play him as like a long-haired 90s guy, it was such a challenge. And it's very funny because they also have like Christian Slater has kind of like he's one of the little the
Merry Men
and Merry Band, and clearly they're trying to like push him, like we want Christian Slater to be big, and it's all about hair and early 90s, and of course Morgan Freeman is in it, who's great. But it's the early 90s, like we're not racist Hollywood kind of stuff where Morgan Freeman would say something wise and everyone would kind of look at each other like, wow, look at this guy knew what he was talking about. He maybe
we've underestimated him for reasons not clear.
Exactly. It was
like Robin Hood men in tights.
Danny, you'll laugh very hard.
Oh, I really can't wait. I'm going to actually write you afterwards.
Please do.
Well, Alex, this has been a delight.
This is so much fun. Thank you so much for doing this.
Thank you, guys.
This is a really fun one. It's fun to catch up. And when you're in LA, I hope we get to see you.
Absolutely.
I got to go to one of your Christmas parties. That was the last time I saw you. I crashed it with my friend David Pressman and came there, and it was and I was like, oh man, I should have crashed this earlier, and now you're gone and they're gone. So I had a blast there, but
do we have any time left for me to call David Pressman a miserable fuck?
Yes, please. Do.
All right,
it's in there.
Glad you got it in.
It's absolutely in there. Well, thank you, Alan.
Yeah, thank you so much.
You're awesome. I love your podcast.
And thank you, Doing It Nation. We'll see you next week. Viva la revolución.